Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought us high standards of hosting and intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's mantra was less is more, more or less, and he always offered us more. Today, let me introduce the Brieflies. Sitting beside me and engineering the show from behind the board at the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon. And keeping us on course is my friend, flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, Voice of Vachon board member, West Texas Roughneck and Eastern Montana band member, former Army Intelligence Specialist and fellow treetop flyer, Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman.
Well, folks, thanks for tuning in. It's been great having you on the show today. sorry.
That intro is getting longer.
I know. That's what I was thinking, man. The show's about over for that intro. No, I'm here. Thanks.
Good. Yeah, and you had a very good show.
Thank you.
If people were listening to that before, that was wonderful.
Yeah, that was what we did for those of you folks who weren't. We did Come From Away. We did the whole play. This morning on our morning scramble.
This is a great tribute to 9/11.
Yeah, it was really fun to do.
Now, Kevin isn't with us this morning.
I don't see him.
I'm not going to introduce Kevin unless he shows up.
Okay.
So normally we've got Kevin Jones with us as part of the Brieflies. But we do have, zooming in from his home, historian extraordinaire, skipper of the Vashona, president of Vashon's own fantastic Heritage Museum, party animal, and our own globe-trotting guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman. How you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing well. It's good to be here this morning.
Yep, we're always happy to see you there. Your smiling face.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is the voice of Craig Bellis, former tow truck repo man, Pinkerton guardian of Pan Am's first 747 at San Francisco International. High fashion shoe salesman, former Washington State attorney, assistant attorney general, tort and constitutional law professor, two-time half-bright Fulbright scholar, and international arbitrator and mediator.
Well, you're almost as long as mine.
Almost, but it takes up less space here on my little script.
Well, I think you read faster.
I do. And joining us today is Alex Bruel, incoming new editor-in-chief of the Vachon Beachcomber. How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing good. How are you, Craig? I like that half bright, full bright there. Yeah. That was good. Does that make you three quarters bright?
That makes me something. I think I've said this before. My daughter, who's got multiple degrees, when I told her getting a Fulbright the first time just a few years ago, she goes, "Dad, you're too old to be a Fulbright." And I said, "Well, you're going to have to call me a half wit." Okay, before we start warning Alex about what makes Vachon weird, let's take a moment to check in with everybody about what they've been up to this last week. Bruce, what have you been doing?
Well, watching with interest the progress on the troll, so that will be interesting. And, watching summer fade away slowly here. Still get sunshine, but definitely fall is in the air, so preparing myself for the long, dark days of winter.
Yeah.
Right.
I know. Did you submit an article or something to the Beachcomber this last week?
I did. Yeah, it should be in this week's Beachcomber, I think. Alex would know more about that.
Yes, it will be. It'll history of movements to put a bridge on the island.
No,
bridge controversy.
Oh, that should be fun.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see that.
Yeah,
that just came up in another setting for me the other day because I monitored that monster gathering where everybody was, where there were almost 2,000 people. It was, you know,
pitchforks and torches.
Yeah, exactly. Kevin, let's see. Kevin is still not. Nope.
No, I'm looking for him.
Truman, how about you? What have you been up to?
Well, I had a really fun weekend. I had an invitation to go to a birthday party that was my very, very first flight student, and who eventually became an airplane partner, and I shared an airplane, and also obviously a very good friend. He was having his 70th birthday party, so it was. He lives right very close to Payne Field, so rather than driving across the ferry and I flew up to Payne Field in our airplane, and took Uber over and stayed at a hotel there and went to the party, had a wonderful time. It was great. And a whole bunch of folks that I knew, and he has a big family, so several of his sisters were there. And anyway, it was just great fun. They flew back in the morning, and then you can tell about what we did in the afternoon.
I will, but you didn't happen to have a crash with him, did you? Did you two?
No,
you
I did guys, not. You, no, I, you, no, I did not no, have a crash
okay.
with him.
Okay.
No, only you. Only you, Craig. I saved that for you.
Thank you. I'm special.
Yes, indeed.
Hey, Truman, let me ask you about the 747s. Or 777s.
Yeah.
787s?
No, 777s. 777s, yeah.
777s, yeah.
Well, those are something, huh?
They were all over the airport.
Yeah. There's nine of them lined up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they had. They were in their original paint. You know, they hadn't been.
They're green.
Yeah.
So and they. Ready for deliveries?
Yeah. They were they're awaiting delivery. They didn't have their engines hung yet. So they had big counterweights hung out there where the engines go. But, I think they're awaiting. They probably have been sold. I don't think they build one until they're sold. But then they have to take them back in and put the engines on. You know, one thing I did not notice, and I should look at that picture closer. Generally, when they build an airplane, they paint the rudder. They paint the rudder of the colors of the company that's buying it. And the reason they do that is because it has to be balanced. And so they paint it so they have the correct weight. And so consequently, sometimes you'll go by Boeing Field and you'll see a whole bunch of green airplanes, but they've all got different tails on them, or rudders, because of the company that buys them.
That's an option, the engine you can put on some of those, isn't it?
There are a couple of options, yeah. I think there's either GE or Rolls.
Rolls.
Yeah, I think with the two.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. CFM. That's the other.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
You don't want to slight anybody.
No.
We may want to buy one of those engines for a plane.
We could need one. Yeah.
We might. Hey, Alex, how about you? Have you been able to do anything relaxing other than starting on your new job?
I had a very relaxing day of work this Saturday. I spent my first, as far as I know, my first true weekend on the island. And I spent the day kind of bouncing from event to event. So I went to the Makai Japan Festival, visited the Latino market and the sort of that lot next to the theater, and then also went to the reopening for some of the new amenities at the Bark. Really fun, all three of them. Got some great photos. You'll see them in the paper this week. And I would say it was special. I think when you report on a community the first time that you really... You know, I've spent a few weeks kind of acclimating here, and so I've had some time to make some calls and do some stories on the margins, but this was the first time that I was really out and about, shaking hands and bumping fists and getting photos, and that felt good.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you did hit three great events. Super. Let's see. Buddy Holly... was the show I had on last Thursday, the Buddy Holly birthday show, which was great fun. September 7th, this day Buddy Holly died. Was born, unfortunately. He only lived to be 22 years of age, but we played a lot of his songs and those of his contemporaries. Mike Nichols, my harmonica master co-host. And then related... I think it was Friday evening, it was the Dusty 45s with Billy Huell, who is the fellow who played Buddy Holly in the play in Seattle and here on Vashon. They're always a great band. Then we had a hangar party. Truman and I had hanging out at the hangar for a bunch of Voice of Vashon supporters. Was a fundraiser, and we had a beautiful day and a lot of good conversation. at that. And then right after that, I was going to go home, but I decided to drive down the main highway. And I was able to catch the Tom Wallace Memorial at Dig Deep. That was a great crowd that was there memorializing Tom Wallace's life. And great guy, wonderful man. We're going to miss him on the island. So with that, and there were some other things too, chores around the house, but we won't mention those. Today is a significant day, as Bruce Holman says, as are all days. September 12th is the 255th day of the year. 110 days remain in the year, and you only have 104 shopping days till Christmas.
Oh, boy.
You better get on that, Truman.
I am.
Today is National Video Games Day, Chocolate Milkshake Day, National Police Woman Day, and National Day of Encouragement, which I think is a great day.
That's a great day.
Yeah, you read about it. That actually is a fairly well-developed national day. You can change people's life trajectories with a little bit of encouragement. In history, on this day in 1940, four teenage boys found the Lascaux Cave in Montagnac, France. I actually spelled this out, phonetically, and I still screwed it up. That's the famous cave with the marvelous paintings of the animals. Some 600 full-size paintings, I think, in there. Or actually, some of them, I think, are larger than life. Mm-hmm. This day in 1959, the first regularly scheduled color TV show aired. Who knows what show that was?
I was just going to ask.
Does anybody know?
No.
Bonanza.
Really?
Really?
Oh, I'm glad to know that.
Yeah, Bonanza. 14 seasons, 431 episodes. Second only to one other show.
MASH.
MASH.
Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke.
Oh. 20 seasons, 635 episodes.
I have to tell you just a very short story.
Yeah.
I was stationed in Germany when I was in the Army. After Vietnam, I went to Germany.
Yeah.
And we used to watch German television.
Yes.
Black and white, and they would have Gunsmoke.
Yeah.
And Marshal Dillon would kick the doors open and walk in and go, Was ist los in das Gasthaus, Miss Kitty?
Hendheim.
And we used to just howl laughing. You know, but anyway, there you go.
Wunderbar.
Indeed.
They spoke better German than you spoke
yes, indeed.
German.
Yes.
All right. And then finally, kind of a sad note, and I can't believe it's 20 years ago. On this day in 2003, country music legend Johnny Cash died at the ripe young age of 71.
Wow.
Yeah.
20 years ago, though. Wow.
Yeah. That just surprised me.
Yeah, me too.
Boy, we have been losing some of our musicians and artists here. I guess that's life, huh?
Indeed.
All right. Let's switch from that, and let's move on to the small talk segment. And Alex Bruel, the soon-to-be new Beachcomber editor. Welcome, Alex. I'm going to ask you to sort of start out and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself. Where have you lived? What's your education? That sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll sort of begin with a fun little anecdote that kind of dawned on me a few weeks ago. So I was born and raised in Federal Way. And the area of Federal Way I grew up, kind of on the north end, near the water. Our grandparents' house was actually on the water. And our house, you know, faced this Puget Sound. So what I realized a couple weeks ago is I spent the first 18 years of my life staring out at Maury Island, which, I don't know, if you want to read some poetry into that, I suppose you could. But I found that kind of fascinating. So born and raised there, I went to Federal Way High School, and then I went to the University of Washington to get my undergraduate degree. I ended up majoring in philosophy and journalism. So if you combine the two of those, you almost have a wise career choice.
You have a full brain. You have a right side and a left side,
Indeed.
Don't you?
That's right. That's right. Well, and I, you know, I found that I was really interested in where the two of them met. And both of them kind of got me to what I was interested in studying, but the combination I thought was really fascinating. Because really, I'm a writer at heart. And so I went from there. I kind of bounced around a little bit. So after graduating, I moved down to Longview, Washington, 45 minutes north of Portland, a community of about 20, 30,000 people. I covered law enforcement, crime, courts there for about 3 years. And then in the middle of the pandemic, I moved back up here. I worked at the Enumclaw Courier Herald for a time. And then the same company owns that paper as owns the Federal Way Mirror, which I went to next. And then most recently also owns the Beachcomber, which is how I have found myself here. Just a little bit about how I've moved around. So I've kind of made the rounds in Western Washington so far. And then I notice you have here to talk a little bit about my awards. So if you'll just give me 45 minutes here, I can list all of them.
Go for it.
Good.
I'll list three that I think might be interesting. I've got an award for covering a story of Green Beret soldiers who survived the eruption of Mount St. Helens. The numbers, because this was part of our 40th anniversary coverage of the mountain. I worked with an editor, Andre Stepankowski, who was a Pulitzer Prize winner for his coverage of the mountain. So incredible journalist, really, really tenacious, hardworking. One of the stories that I wrote for that year was about this, I think it was 78 Green Beret soldiers who were doing military training exercises. I mean, they were just hanging out in the area of the mountains, and the eruption basically went over them. And so the headline of the article was one mountain or one ridge too far, because if they had just been, and really it was a lucky thing, if they hadn't been under this mountain, you can sort of imagine the debris and the shockwave. I mean, it just went straight over their heads.
Wow.
They were all fine. They helped people evacuate from nearby city of Packwood. And that was a story that hadn't been told.
Yeah, I had not heard that story.
No, me either. That's fabulous.
So that was a cool one. And then more recently, I've been awarded for coverage of wolverine repopulation on Mount Rainier. So we have, I don't know if you've heard of Meerkat Manor on Animal Planet, but we sort of have Wolverine Mansion on Mount Rainier. There's a family, a dynasty being established by one sort of female matriarch and a few males that she visits. In that area. And so there's wolverines have been gone, extirpated from the area for like 100 years, and they're just now returning. But the problem is it's only one family up there. They don't have genetic diversity, so they need to get some eligible bachelors in for the rest of the wolverines.
Were they brought in, or did they just appear? Did they?
Wolverines, this
yeah,
population. No, they traveled down there from the North Cascades.
Okay.
So,
okay.
You know, they risked highways and wildfires and, you know, wolves, I guess.
This is Husky country, not Michigan.
Well, I didn't think so. Anyway, interesting.
And that's, you've gotten to tell us about another award.
Yeah, I'll be quick here. I'm already going
over my mental
a lot of time. I did an interview with a woman who wrote the biography of Judith Mawson, who was the ex-wife of the Green River Killer. Oh. And as part of writing that, I actually interviewed Judith and kind of did an update, like, where is she now? And one of the things that shocked me about her life was she has remarried since leaving the Green River Killer. And one of my questions was, how on earth do you ever trust a romantic partner again after being in a relationship like that? I think if I had gone through that, I feel like I would probably have lost my ability to trust someone. And her answer was really struck me. She said, I basically, in as many words, she said, I don't give him that kind of power over my life. I don't give, you know, the Green River Killer. He doesn't have the right or the ability to take away my ability to love and trust people. And I mean, that was just beautiful.
Ah, yeah. Yes. He's not going to let him alter my approach to life.
Why should I suffer more just because of, you know?
Wow. That's fascinating. Where can we find that?
That will be on, if you search for the Courier Herald, that was when I worked in Enumclaw, because all that went down in the Auburn, Green River, Enumclaw area. Mm-hmm. So if you go to CourierHerald.com and search Green River Killer or Judith Mawson, you can find it there.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. You put Green River Killer in Google, and you'll come up with my name many times.
Oh, really? Okay. No, were you involved?
Not because I was accused of being the Green River Killer, but I represented the individual before Ridgway who was thought to be the Green River Killer.
Oh, interesting.
One of the more interesting clients I ever had.
Wow.
Well, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it was a long search to find Ridgway.
It was. It was a long. There was a lot of pressure on Reichert and the rest of the task force to come up with somebody. Yeah. So, any other awards you want to share with us? Or?
I'll leave it at that. I think those are the three more interesting ones.
Those are great. What do you do, you know, in your private life in terms of personal interests and whatnot? Are you an axe thrower or a...
actually despise axe throwing.
Not your favorite thing.
Well, I don't mind axe throwing as a hobby. What bothers me is all the axe throwing places where you can get beer and axe throw.
At the same time.
Because to me, that's like serving beer at the gun range.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
If I'm playing... I do like playing with deadly weapons, but I don't think it's appropriate to be
inebriated. Not to mix the two.
The mix, no. Keep them separate, you know.
Now, what about your... What are your personal interests?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I'm kind of a writer at heart, so I think this is probably something that'll be familiar to a lot of creatives. I have this long dream of publishing kind of short fiction that, you know, I've been talking about doing for years and still have yet to turn any results up, but that's something that I kind of hack away at. I like music. I like playing and producing music. Play a lot of tabletop games with friends. So if you've heard of like Dungeons and Dragons, I'm one of those nerds. and then I think your typical Pacific Northwest hiking, biking. This is squid fishing season is starting up, so that's something I'm looking forward to doing.
You're going to participate in Passport to Pain this weekend?
I won't be around, unfortunately.
Oh, gee.
Oh,
yeah,
darn.
I had something just come up. No, yeah. I'm taking my family member to the Puyallup Fair on Saturday, and that's kind of been in the books for a while. Otherwise, I would.
Yep, I understand. At our hangar party, we had Bruce Morsher was one of the individuals. He's probably considered the founder of Passport to Pain. Mm-hmm. I think he started that whole thing
ten
years ago.
Yeah.
I'll have to think of a better excuse for next year.
That's
right. Exactly.
Right. The pressure will be on.
Yeah. Right.
And I understand that you're attempting to move to Vashon from Federal Way. How's that task going?
I've succeeded.
Oh, hey, congratulations.
Nailed down a place. Thank you. I get the keys Friday. It's a yurt in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
So it's on the south side of the island. It's a really cool little place.
I mean,
I've got about an acre to myself.
Wow.
Renting it from a really nice guy. The place is great.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it.
They heat up nicely.
Yeah. It's very well insulated. It's got a wood burning fireplace. So, and I kind of like it cold anyway. So,
you're going to fit right in.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Truman, you had a question?
Yeah, I was just wondering, Vashon is kind of a unique place, to say the least. And I was wondering if you've had any first surprises or anything that particularly impressed you about our community.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most salient thing that I've taken away from the last month is just how much people care and how vocal they are about how much they care, which is great. I mean... in my month here, I've probably received more feedback from readers in a month than I did easily in a year working at the Federal Way Mirror. And I think the Beachcomber is just maybe a bigger part of people's lives in a community like this than it is in a bigger city that's more connected, that's on the mainland. But I think this is what I would call a chosen community for many people. I think suburbs and commuter towns, you have a lot of people who, you do have people who choose to live there and who it's their home community. You also have a lot of people who, this is just kind of where they're at for the moment, especially people kind of my age. And Vashon seems like not that kind of place. It doesn't seem like the kind of place you end up on accidentally, or without very little thought. So, people care about the community. It matters a lot to them that we get right what we do, and I think that's an honor to get criticism like that. It's the worst thing is when people don't care and you don't hear any and you make a mistake and you never know because you're never told. So that really struck me.
You will not have to worry about that here.
Yes,
I can assure you.
I'm sure.
Yeah, if you make a mistake, you will hear about it.
Yeah.
No, you know, I think because we have this moat that goes around us, you know, that we are kind of isolated and we're a lot more a cohesive community than you might find elsewhere.
And absolutely.
I really like your analogy there. What am I trying to say there, Craig?
I don't know.
Well, describing the difference between them. I think you have it right on. There you go. Sorry. Yeah. Any particular current issues that have come up that you've found? Or?
Well, no one really seems to care much about the fairies. I don't get the sense that that's an important...
No, of course I'm kidding.
No. The fairies are clearly far and away the single most important issue on the island. And I wrote an editorial for the paper last week basically saying, they are the highway system for any community is the veins by which, lifeblood goes in and out. And so for us, when the ferries are out, it's like a heart attack. Mm-hmm. It's when you're on a literal island, when you don't have another way on or off, the ferries are vitally, you can't state how important they are. So that's clearly the biggest issue. I think secondarily, affordability and housing, and I would kind of tie that into a broader conversation about cultural change on the island. And I think people, talking and questioning who is the island for? Is this an artsy, hippie community? Is this a second and third house community? Is this a working class community? And so I think all those conversations, like, you can't disentangle them from affordability and housing and, who do we want to live here? I think every community in Washington in the last few years especially has been talking about how do you kind of maintain the quality community you want and how do you also make sure people can afford to live there? And that's not an easy balancing act.
That's huge.
You're right. Before I forget, the ferry issue, there is going to be a ferry action forum at the high school on Monday, September 9th, starting at 6:30, where most of our, I think all of our state representatives will be present. So if you have something you want to say or you want to hear what the latest is on ferries, come to the high school on Monday at 6:30. You'll be seeing a lot of publicity about that here in the next week.
I think that date is, I think you may have said September 9th. It's September 18th.
It would be September 9th only in an alternative universe. September 18th. Thank you very much.
Of course.
I've got somebody here to keep me relatively straight. Hey, by the way, we were just joined by, zooming in from his home.
I believe it's his boat, actually.
Oh, from his boat. It does look like his boat.
Not high
above Burden, but from his boat is the voice of Indivisible Vashon and the Vashon Climate Action Group, our tireless defender of democracy who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate. Kevin Jones. Welcome, Kevin.
It's great to be here. I wish I could claim I was in a different time zone or something, but no, it's just, something triggered the brain. It was not the Brown Briefly today, but here we are. Today's the day. So thank you for the reminder, Truman.
Yeah. And where are you?
We are in Sydney, British Columbia today.
Oh, cool.
Oh, you're coming in loud and clear, too. That's nice.
Yeah.
We're right. No kidding. I can see the Wi-Fi tower at the marina right outside the window of the boat. And interestingly, as you walk by that tower, there's a boat's next door power cord wrapped around it, right below the sign that says, do not tie up to the Wi-Fi tower. So perfect poetic justice. But the tower's working, and I'm glad to be with you guys.
How long are you going to be out and about?
But another 7 or 8 days.
Okay. All right. Good for you.
We hope to revisit some of our favorite foodie hangouts here in Sydney. We've got the Indian restaurant, the Thai restaurant, and the Beacon Tea Shop on the list.
Nice.
Maybe the Greek, that Susie says the Greek, don't forget the Greek restaurant. So.
After those plugs, maybe we can get them to be underwriters of the Voice of Vashon.
Anything is possible.
That's right. Hey, Bruce, I think you had a question or two for Alex.
I did, Alex. Welcome to the island, and I'm glad you found a place to live on the island. And that issue that you brought up is really all about gentrification. Who is Vashon? And there are multiple Vashons, of course. And so my question for you is, when do you actually take over as editor? And how have you and Liz been working, Liz Shepherd, who is the current editor, have you two been working together to make that a smooth transition? And so if you could just talk a little bit about that, that'd be great.
Yeah, of course. The official date is October 2nd. That's a Monday. So at the strike of midnight, everyone's inquiries and complaints and questions and kudos to the editor email address will begin to come to me. Liz has been fantastic. I mean, she knows this community inside and out. She's lived here for a long time. And it's been, I mean, you know, I'm 28. This is my first time. I had a leadership role at my student newspaper, but this is a little different. This is sort of my first time in a larger community and at a, you know, professional non-student newspaper. And so there have been a few moments of, you know, okay, I'm accepting a level of responsibility that is new to me. And so that's, you know, it's a little bit of not even fear, but you know, that's a moment of growth. And so she's been really good helping me kind of navigate those and understand, you know, I'm ready to do this. And then just the practical stuff of, you know, here are the various characters that you'll meet on the island. That's a conversation, by the way, any new journalist at any you know, outlet, one of the first things you talk about is, you know, the 15 or 20 or so names that you will be, you know, you always have your characters and the you know, good and bad and weird and normal, just all sorts of people who come up frequent newsmakers. And then just kind of driving me around, showing me the highlights, some of the places that are, you know, also frequently making news, answering questions. I had the help of her and Darylyn, our publisher, and actually securing a place to live, just because, of course, that was sort of the biggest challenge up front. And now that that's solved, I feel pretty kind of smooth sailing for the rest of the next few weeks.
Good. Great. Well, you majored in journalism and philosophy. So as Craig mentioned earlier, you've got both sides of your brain at work there. Can you tell us a little bit about what your philosophy of reporting, what's your philosophy of journalism, and how do you see that affecting the Beachcomber and your role as editor of the Beachcomber?
Oh, yeah. How much time you have? this is my wheelhouse. I think that, so I'll start at kind of a broad level. So I think I group journalists in a category of jobs, I think like law enforcement, where I have the belief that it's a difficult job. It's a job with high expectations. And it's a job where if you don't think you can measure up to it, or if you're not interested in hearing feedback from people and in improving the craft, then you should probably, there's nothing wrong with you, but you should find something else to do. So I think it's important to take it really seriously, which I try to take it seriously. I believe in being impartial, but I think objectivity is perhaps an illusion. So what I mean by that is there's this sort of golden standard of, you know, the impassive, totally objective, you know, I'm the neutral observer who has, you know, can see every situation and the clear light, you know, in Plato's clear light of day outside the cave. I don't think that's possible. I think everyone is biased. I think everyone comes into a situation with their own lens. And so I try to acknowledge that. And so my goal is never to claim that I have some perfect view of what is right or wrong in a situation. All I can do is present the facts, present the information, do my best to not rely on one side too much or to give one side too much oxygen, but at the same time to go where the evidence leads. And if one side doesn't make a lot of sense, then to tell people that it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, but at the same time to let people make their own decision.
So you do recognize that this issue of false equivalency, it does arise quite often in journalism.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's you know, it's one of the many balancing acts that we do. I mean, I think historians have the same challenge to make. I mean, you need to capture. I've covered a lot because I've worked in a lot of different communities, and I've covered anti-vaccine mandate protests. I've covered a lot of protests, especially during 2020, and frequently there would be protests where people would say things that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And the question was, well, do I reproduce this? I mean, how do I share to the community that this is what people feel? And how do I do that honestly and without insulting them, but at the same time without giving, you know, anyone free rein to
credence to what they're saying?
And it's different every time. It's a challenge I enjoy taking on, and I think it's something it's one of the things I think I'm better at than other things in journalism. So it's always a balancing act, and I think you got to lead with the truth first.
You're right on there. I've been working with Brandon Raynon from the Puyallup tribe. We're developing a new permanent exhibit for the museum, so we're working very closely with the Puyallup tribe. And Brandon always says, this is a story of the Puyallup tribe, not the story. And it's that recognition that there are many stories, and there are many perspectives, and there are many sort of different interpretations. And as a historian, you know, basically historians and reporters are two phases of the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the old adage that the newspaper is the first draft of history. And I do that a lot. I go back to the Vashon newspapers all the time. But it's important to understand that there are multiple perspectives out there. There are lots of stories. And as a historian, as a reporter, you have to always keep that forefront in your mind. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I really appreciate you recognizing that you do have your own filters. I mean, you're going to have those, and the information that's coming into your consciousness is filtered by those filters. And so you have to be aware of that. And I think that's brilliant the way you put it. So
there's a filter at every, I'll just say there's a filter at every point in the process. There's a filter in who I choose to listen and talk to. And then there's the filter of how I hear what they're saying and what I interpret. And then there's a filter of how I write it. So it's foolish to think that, you know, for any reporter or any writer to think that they have some unvarnished view of everything. It's just impossible.
I'd love to devote a whole show to this issue. I think this issue may have gotten our last president elected. the way the press, is motivated by economics a lot of the time, especially the national television press. But be that as it may, I'm really thrilled to hear the way you've answered that question, and I can tell you have a lot more to say about it.
Yeah, like I said, just let me go and you won't get me to stop. Okay. Yeah.
Kevin, you had a question or two, didn't you?
Yes. First of all, Alex, I do hope we cross paths at the a candidate forum, which is the Vashon Mori Community Council's meeting this Thursday on the 21st of September, next week, where I plan to be there. I'll keep an eye out for you. Hopefully we can have a chance to meet and chat. But speaking of filters, for a local paper, which clearly the Beachcomber is, what do you think the role of national or international news should play in terms of making it onto the pages of the Beachcomber?
Little. I'm not going to say none. I think that people read local news because they want local news. Those who are news hounds for national and international news, there is no lack of ways to get it. And the practical and economic realities, I mean, this reminds me of when I worked in Longview and I'd gotten a call from a woman. This was right after Trump had been elected, so even when we weren't trying to, you know, the word Trump appeared in a lot of our local news articles, whether we wanted it or not, because it was it came up. And there was a woman who had called me and who really wanted me to write all these articles about Trump's presidency. And I didn't know how to explain to her, you know, I don't have enough time to cover Cowlitz County. I certainly don't have enough time to cover Washington, D.C. And I don't know anyone in D.C. So I guess I say all that to say that my attitude is I look for the local connection in everything. So we're actually working on some stories right now. There's one about two young people who are competing at a global competition for a game that they're both experts at. But, you know, they're local from Vashon. So that's there's a local connection. I think anytime we're dipping our toes into national or international news, to me, it's like what we're looking for. What is the local connection? You know, the wildfires in Hawaii are a good example. You know, a lot of news outlets here spoke with people who had relatives who lived there, who were also living in the Puget Sound. Other than that, if there's not a local connection, I don't think it's worth our time. I mean, unless I don't know, the second coming happens, then I guess we got to have an article about that. But anything short of that, I think, is probably beyond me.
Kevin?
Well, certainly the other interesting thing about the Maui wildfires is the potential for the similar outcomes happening here.
So exactly.
I see where your point is being made. Yeah, good point. So as you approach this new community and this new job as editor of our local paper, what do you see as the most significant challenges and maybe the most significant opportunities that you see in front of you?
Yeah, I think so far, I think I mentioned this earlier, but this is a vocal community. This is a community that will give feedback, and that's great. It's also a challenge. It's a sort of the gauntlet is thrown down to me to, kind of manage the newspaper and to give people something really, really high quality. And it's a small staff. It's going to be me as the editor. Liz is going to be part-time. We have Darylyn as the publisher, and we have Pat, who is our part-time office manager. So we don't have infinite resources. And so, back when I worked in Longview, which was at a daily paper, we called it the Daily Miracle, because it always felt like a miracle that we actually put an entire paper out. And so I'll probably be referring to the Weekly Miracle here. But, it is a miracle. I mean, it's a beautiful, it is kind of a beautiful. And I mean, I take a lot of pride in the idea that I have a career as a writer. I mean, not a lot of people get to say that. So that's a huge opportunity, obviously. There's a lot of interesting, newsworthy people on this island. There's a lot of just fascinating inventors and artists and people. So that's a great opportunity, I think, to get to know some of them. I've been thinking about little projects and ideas that we could run in the paper, and one of them is just, what if we just picked a random person every month and just tried to glean something from their life story? Could be fun. That's what I would say.
I think you're going to be really amazed at some of the people that live on this island. The gentleman that started the Briefly, Brian Brown, was a 30-year employee of Time Magazine in New York, and writer and editor, and fascinating man. And he's just one of hundreds of people of that caliber that live on this island. It truly is amazing. Yeah. You're going to be very pleasantly surprised.
You know, I was curious. I mean, it may be a little premature to ask you this question, but have you got any changes in mind for the paper? Any branding, focus, layout, business, hard copy, is that going to stick around? Your thoughts on any of those things, or do you think it's too early to even say?
Yeah, it's very early. I think given how new I am to the community, how new I am to an editorial role, I don't think it would be appropriate to come in swinging around a ton of, burn everything down and build it up again. So I'm going to take a pretty conservative approach, I think, at least starting out to I think the first few months here, we're just keeping the ship running at the same speed that it was under Liz. And I think even that is going to be difficult and fun. And then I think as time goes on and I started sort of getting more into the groove of the island, like I said before, I've got little ideas, little features. I think people might have an interest in a police blotter, which is something that I'm seeing if we can get that going.
We used to have that, and yeah. it was one of my favorite elements of the newspaper.
Yeah.
Because you hear, you go, what?
Yeah.
What happened over there? Yeah.
The best stories, my mind always goes back to Longview, but there is a specific blotter story from there, and the police report said that there was a 911 call because there were two men in a park whipping each other. They were hitting each other with whips.
With whips. So the
police came and checked on them, and they said, "We're fine. This is mutual,
this
consensual
is what we do.
Whipping." So I just, mutual whippers. So
that's great. You know, a lot of papers, the Goldendale paper used to have a section, a lot of little papers did it. They had a social section where so-and-so went over to so-and-so's house for dinner. You would have got that whipping story, and you would have tried to figure out which part of the paper went in, the police blotter or the social.
Right, exactly. Or maybe it's an arts piece. I mean, maybe there's a performative aspect to it.
That's great.
And to your point, I think chicken dinner stuff like that, just stories stories about, you know, newspapers, a lot of what newspapers used to do has been subsumed by Facebook, mm-hmm. And reporting on just the beautiful and kind of some maybe forgettable minutia of life, but it's still important. So I'm really interested in finding ways to get the community to help us kind of get those on the paper, because we obviously don't have time to vet them all ourselves. But for the most part, don't expect anything too drastic to change in the next few months.
Okay.
Because I certainly don't.
Bruce, you want to follow up?
Yeah, I just wondered what you think about the future of the Beachcomber. I mean, local newspapers are dropping like flies all over the country. Mm-hmm. Just what, 2-3 weeks ago, we had the raid on the paper and I think in Kansas, where they confiscated everything. So local news and local papers, particularly small town papers, are under tremendous pressure right now, both financially and sort of politically and socially. So how do you see that sort of playing out with the Beachcomber at this point?
Yeah, to your point, I just very briefly have to shout out the Chronicle in Lewis County, which is currently getting legal threats from Washington's candidate for Washington's 3rd Congressional District, Joe Kent, over their reporting. And another example of a, you know, not just economic, and but this is a direct sort of political fight that is, you know, a challenge for that newspaper. So shout out to the Chronicle. Yeah, I think the Beachcomber, we are subject to the same economic forces that every newspaper in the country is. You know, audiences are turning away from print, especially younger audiences. I think the sort of atomization of social bonds in this country, I think people, things like the newspaper, I think were stronger when people had stronger community ties. And I think as people, you know, people don't go to church together as often, or they move around more. And I think we're moving into a more individualized kind of culture. But I think a place like Vashon is actually sort of optimistic in that sense. I think this is a place that has strong community ties, and I don't see those ties atrophying anytime soon. And I think as long as that's the case, we'll continue to be healthy. I mean, the newspaper is healthy economically. You know, compared to our sibling newspapers in the area, we consistently, I mean, I'm bragging a little bit now, but, you know, we consistently have, you know, higher page counts. We've got more news. I think a big part of that is the health of a newspaper is really going to come down to the health of the community. We're a business like any other. So I'm optimistic, but you're right that in the long term, there are going to be, I mean, there is an inevitable financial pressure that I think most newspapers in 40 years will, I mean, I think very few will be printing print copies, maybe in 20 years.
You know, I think you're right on. Vashon obviously is a strong community, you know, and physically and culturally, we're a very strong community. And I really see the Beachcomber and the Voice of Vashon being quite complementary to one another, to foster that that community. And I think there's going to be a long life for the both of us. So
yeah, here, here.
You know, something that we've talked about at over a long period of time is the change in the way people get their information. And, you know, obviously it's changed dramatically in the last 10, 15 years in particular. But just to follow up with you, Craig, I completely agree. I think this community really looks forward every week to the Beachcomber coming out. I know that, you know, they want to read about their island friends and what's happening. And I think that's going to help the Beachcomber and KVSH for that matter. So anyway, I agree that we're going to be here.
Yeah. Kevin.
And yeah, Alex, I just wanted to your shout out about the Chronicle. That's the Chronicle in, I think it's the name of the paper.
Yes.
And I believe it's at cronline.com. You got their website, CHRONLINE.com. Sometimes people want to subscribe to local papers who are being challenged.
Yeah.
So make sure that they do have a continued voice. So if any of our listeners are interested, cronline.com.
Good catch there, Kevin. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us? We've covered, you know, the mountaintops of a lot of different subjects. Anything else today?
No, I want to thank all of you guys. I mean, this has been really cool. I appreciate getting a chance to kind of share a little bit about myself with your listeners. And I guess I just want to say I'll be around in the community. I mean, I'm living on the island. I'll be going to art shows. I'll be out and about puttering on my bike. So, you know, don't feel afraid to come up and say hi to me. And this is a commitment I'm making. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'll tell you, Alex, the Brieflees, thank you very much for coming on the show and telling us about yourself and your plans as the future new editor of The Beachcomber. And you're welcome to stay and join us, because now we, for the last few minutes of the show, kind of show our true colors and talk about various political not other issues that aren't necessarily political, but the political news seems to be dominating here quite a bit. As a matter of fact, I had to ask... had to add a few things just this morning to my list of potential issues to talk about. So join in if you'd like to. Occasionally we'll have individuals here who feel they can't.
But here's another one of my beautiful little excuses. I would love to stay. We got to put a paper out, unfortunately.
So this is the day.
And this is a good thing for people to know in general. If you have something urgent for me on a Tuesday, I better be really urgent, because this is the day we put the paper out. So every minute is somewhat of the essence for me. But next time, I'd love to.
Yeah, we really, really appreciate you making the time on a very, very busy day.
Yeah. And personally, I'm really excited to have you here and working on the island. It's going to be a real benefit to the island, I think. So welcome and congratulations on the job.
Thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate that.
Right. All right. So, gentlemen, Brieflees. Let me just start out with the impeachment inquiry of President Biden that Kevin McCarthy opened up today, this morning. What are your thoughts on that? Any thoughts? Kevin, I'm sure you don't have any thoughts on that.
Kevin, I don't understand. Yeah. Yeah, but I can see the threading of the needle so that he probably is unlikely to get the votes in the House to proceed. So he has to go this way. And so we'll see how much of a backfire it creates. I think there's high potential, but, we shall see.
I'm hoping that maybe he did this from a strategic point of view, so he might actually be able to come up with a deal on the budget. One hand, the other sort of thing, yin and yang. Bruce?
It's smoke and mirrors. I think you're right. You know, he's got to feed the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world, you know, throw him some raw meat every once in a while to keep him from jumping on his loins. So, you know, that's what he's doing. And it's clear to me that this is a way that they'll be able to slip through a bill that will allow the government to keep operating, because I think they have learned, everybody in Washington, D.C., I think, has learned, if you shut the government down, whoever is responsible pays a heavy, heavy price at the polls the next time.
Yes. Truman, anything?
No, I was just, I know, I completely agree.
Really?
No, I know. I'm always the guy that's sticking my foot
in. All right, well, we got other topics.
Oh, yeah, I'm waiting.
You can jump into. Yeah. The one thing we didn't do is we didn't talk about the validity of the underlying allegations, all of the alleged facts that are out there that are the basis for an impeachment. I'm talking with my tongue popping through the side of my cheek as I say it. Kevin, were you going to mention something along, or did you want to bring up a new issue?
Well, I did want to follow up to a thing that you said, Craig, that, yeah, I've seen several reports that say that McCarthy is saying that we need to keep the government going, because otherwise our impeachment inquiry would have to come to a stop.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So there's that.
There it is.
And then there's apparently on X, formerly Twitter, there's a pretty interesting, not that I've gone out there, but I saw some news coverage of it, that basically said, yeah, why not open up an impeachment inquiry? Because then they say that we can get more information. We can subpoena data about, say, Biden's bank records and things like that. So the gist on Twitter is, I see, When you don't have any evidence of a crime, you need to initiate an impeachment inquiry so you can see if you can find some.
Oh,
so I think that's kind of what
it's commonly referred to as a fishing expedition. Mm-hmm. Truman, was there a particular issue that you wanted to move on to?
No, I saw something earlier and now I can't find
Okay, well let me go ahead. Let me mention one of the other ones, the ex-president is now asking that Judge Chutkan is, recuses herself because she's obviously biased against the president of ex-president Trump. Let me just give you my opinion real quick on that. That's a loser.
Yeah.
That as somebody put it on the news the other day or this morning or something, he said that's kind of like Mr. Trump wishing for a pony. What were you going to say, Drew?
Well, the thing that struck me, I mean, I heard several people say that if you're going to ask somebody to recuse you, you have to do it right away. I mean, when they're first appointed, because otherwise, I mean, it's like, oh, you're going to wait until you hear how they're going to rule. And then you say, oh, I think you need to be recused from this because we don't agree with your approach. Come on. I mean, Kevin.
Might as well ask Thomas and Alito to recuse themselves.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Much better arguments there. Yeah. Much better arguments. Kevin?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably fairly obvious to our listeners that this judge doesn't really fit the profile of a person who the former president thinks is an appropriate judge. So in that case, I am all for Judge Chutkan pressing on, keeping the case, and dispensing justice as she sees fit.
Right. Well, sir, do you want to move on to state or local?
I have a real question. And this is primarily for you, Craig, I guess, or maybe Bruce, too. What happens? I mean, the states are the ones who can make an opinion on the 14th Amendment. What is it, paragraph 3 or whatever it is, on the 14th Amendment. What happens if three states, for example, say, no, Trump can't be on the ballot here? What do they do then?
Well, that's appealed to the federal court. Because the federal court has the ultimate say with regards to the interpretation of the U.S. Constitution.
So, but what I read was, though, that the individual states can determine if he can be on the ballot in their state.
They have the initial decision as to whether or not that can occur. But
and then it gets appealed to the federal court.
Right.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I just didn't understand.
Kevin?
Yeah, that's my understanding. Is anybody who applies to be on the ballot in any state, the state has to apply the criteria for whether that individual meets the criteria to be a legal candidate.
Oh,
and so,
okay.
Yeah, that's the argument. People go, wait a minute, he's got to be convicted of insurrection or something before he runs afoul of the 14th Amendment. But as the point here is, he's not being subjected to a criminal penalty. He's being declared unqualified to run for the office. Right. Which is quite a bit different.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and here I think it's important to go back to a careful reading of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which is not a difficult amendment to read. Mm-hmm. It basically says that if you've taken an oath, as our former president has, but then you provide aid and comfort to people who have tried to overturn the government, you should not be allowed to hold office in the future.
Well, that's a wild concept.
When he sent out his video, "We love you, you're very special," during the middle of the January 6th Capitol riot, I read that as aid and comfort to those who are trying to overturn the government or at least stop a process. So we'll see what the Supreme Court ultimately says.
It does appear clear that Colorado seems to be taking the lead in that regard, and we'll see where that ends up. Hey, we're just about out of time. For Alex, Kevin, Bruce, Truman, and me, I thank you for listening to the Brown Briefly show. And tune in next Tuesday when we'll be doing the Truman Show. And we'll have Briefly's plus Lynn Kerrigan, I think, will be joining us. And we'll be pontificating on these subjects and many others.
Indeed.
So thank you.
See you all next week.